A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Hello, Holland.
Hello.
Is that you, Holland?
Indeed it is, yes.
Who are you?
This is the Dutch International Service. Media Network Transatlantic Special.
I'm beginning to hear phones in my sleep these days. We've been bombarded with phone calls and letters asking about a number of recent features on this programme. Some of the calls to our Hilversum 18700 answer line have been quite informative too.
Good evening, this is Chris Danpure phoning from Stevenage Hearts in England. This news has been cabled to me from Family Radio in Oakland, California, to announce that they are having a live show lasting from, as far as European listeners are concerned, 1,600 hours on Thursday the 29th of March, and lasting right round to the early hours of 01 April. This is going to replace all their normal programming and will consist mainly of phone calls for which people outside the United States can participate.
Well, that sounds an interesting marathon. In fact, Religious WYFR are busy installing new transmitters to increase their activities on shortwave sometime this summer. But it appears they aren't the only ones from North America. Joining me now is Roger Broadbent.
Well, in fact, the reason for the transatlantic title at the start of the programme is that over the last 3 days, we've been ringing a lot of telephone numbers in the United States. You may remember, we followed the launch of this radio station a few years ago.
This program is coming to you from the United States of America on WRNO Worldwide.
Joseph Costello's station, and the publicity he's given it in the American Broadcasting Trade Press, has obviously triggered other organizations to think along similar lines. So far, 4 have decided to take a commercial line, and another 5 have decided that shortwave is the ideal medium for spreading the gospel. Since WRNO, commercial station KYOI has come on the air from Saipan, beaming towards Japan, and KNLS in Alaska has materialized as a religious station, broadcasting mainly to China and the Soviet Union. Within a few months, 2 more stations will hit the airwaves. The first is operated by a group calling itself the Assemblies of Yahweh, located in Bethel, Pennsylvania. They've modified an existing 50-kilowatt medium-wave transmitter to work on shortwave, and the antenna is a log-periodic beam towards Europe. We contacted the founder of this organization, Elder Jacob Meyer, and asked him what they're planning to do with their transmitter.
WMLK is planning to broadcast the radio tapes that the Assemblies of Yahweh, our religious organization, has made. Yahweh, of course, is the best transliteration of the Heavenly Father's name rather than Jehovah. We had been broadcasting a few times on shortwave stations. We were once on the WINB station out of Red Lion, Pennsylvania, and we had been on Radio Caroline, and the only thing is a lot of the countries do not allow religious broadcasting. And so we decided to erect our own station.
Now, your antenna, I believe, is beamed towards Europe. Is that correct?
Yeah, the antenna is beamed towards Europe and secondary target area, the Middle East. And, of course, it's a 50,000-watt station. And the antenna will be, of course, a modified log periodic, which we think has pretty good gain.
Hasn't Europe already got the message in terms of some of the broadcasting organizations already within Europe?
Nominal Christianity, of course, is broadcasting on several shortwave stations here in the United States, but they're not hearing the sacred name Yahweh, and that's what we want the world to hear. We believe it's a very important doctrine that has been neglected for several thousand years and hasn't been really taught strongly. We published a new edition of the Bible in which we restored the sacred name to the text.
Now, aren't you going to be in competition to a certain extent with some of the other religious broadcasters that are going to Europe, for example, like WINB or even WYFR?
No, we're not intending to compete with them at all. A lot of the religious broadcasters ask for money, and I sometimes think that they're religious pitchmen, and I don't approve of that. We never ask for money. All we do is preach and teach the message of the sacred scriptures.
But how are you financed, then?
Well, we're financed by people who voluntarily send in contributions.
You're coming to the end of the construction phase, so I understand. Is that right? Or?
That's right. As a matter of fact, when you called, I had just returned from the transmitter site, which is 1 mile west of our headquarters buildings. They're drilling the holes to put up the antenna towers today. We expect to be on the air in about 6 weeks from now in our testing phase. We're hoping to be on the air full-time by fall. We're planning about 8 hours a day programming in our initial stages. Most of it will be in English. We also plan to do some French and Spanish broadcasts, some German too, probably.
It won't be long before tests start from WMLK. They've already coordinated a tentative schedule. 15110 kilohertz will be used between 17 and 19 hours UTC, switching to 15260 kHz between 22 hours and midnight UTC. But were those call letters, WMLK, just chosen at random?
No, the letters actually do stand for something. In Hebrew, the word for messenger is malek. And we chose those letters. We were kind of pushed in that direction to choose those letters. And that's what it really stands for. But in addition, the MLK in Hebrew also stands for king. And if you want to vocalize Melech, it means the salt of the earth.
WMLK has announced its address as simply Post Office Drawer C, Bethel, Pennsylvania, 19507 in the USA. But they're not alone. Not far behind in construction is KCBI, the CBI part standing for Criswell Bible Institute. They too are working on a 50 kilowatt transmitter, but their antennas point to South America as well as Europe. We rang a spokesman for the organization, Mike Middleton, in Dallas, Texas.
KCBI FM is a local station that serves the Dallas-Fort Worth area and here in Texas. KCBI Shortwave will be an extension of that ministry. We are owned by the Criswell Center for Biblical Studies, which in turn owns a Bible college that is operated here locally out of Dallas. And so primarily the focus of our programming will be in the area of religious programming. In looking at the broad spectrum of ministries available to organizations such as ours, we found that the shortwave medium was virtually untapped to use shortwave as an evangelistic tool to reach the unchurched peoples of South America, Europe, and Northern Africa.
When you say unchurched peoples of Europe, aren't there enough churches in Europe?
Certainly plenty of churches. Our ministry is not to take the place of a church, but only to help the church and aid the church in its particular ministry by providing music that is worshipful for individuals when they are not in church, that they can enjoy this beautiful, inspirational music, and also Bible teaching programs that can undergird the ministry of the church in providing Bible teaching daily, whereas a church only has the opportunity to teach one and possibly 2 days a week.
But wouldn't it be better to provide tapes, say, to local radio stations if you're talking about music, because music doesn't go all that well over shortwave, does it?
Limitations of shortwave are the fidelity and so forth is not what you would experience with FM. It may suffer somewhat. We feel that the overriding importance of it necessitates that we do it.
KCBI's schedule for the autumn months has been provisionally announced on the single frequency of 17705 kHz. 17705, between 18 and 20 hours to Europe and between 22 and midnight UTC to South America. So what stage have they reached?
Construction is presently underway. We are in the process of rebuilding the transmitter at this point and securing the antennas and so forth, and we hope to have installation completed, testing completed for an air date beginning by the end of this summer.
KCBI's address will be Box 1809, Dallas, Texas, and the zip code 75221, USA. And initially, programming will be in English and Spanish.
Those then are stations that are nearly ready to come on the air. Meanwhile, the FCC in Washington, D.C. is considering proposals and, in some cases, has already granted a construction permit for no less than four more stations. Harry Norman is a private entrepreneur who spent many years in commercial broadcasting in his part of Alabama. He has plans and most of the finance to complete his proposal of a 100-kilowatt shortwave transmitter. He's also got some suggestions as to the kind of program he plans to broadcast.
We specifically plan to carry international, world-class sporting events, such as in our country we have the Super Bowl, the largest football game in our country, and the World Series, which most everybody knows about. We plan to make one of these events available every day to the listening audience around the world. We plan to broadcast them in several different languages, of course, depending on the time of the day that the sporting events do in fact take place and on which continent they take place. Also, more specifically, we plan to do a great deal of international talk. You could reach our studios here in America via telephone line, via telex.
Hello, I've just got to let you know, 'cause I wonder where you are, and I wonder what you do. Are you somewhere feeling lonely, or is someone loving you?
We plan to broadcast non-controversial type topics.
But you say they're going to be non-controversial, but aren't most of the interesting things that people are talking about, for example, the current state in the Middle East, they are highly political after all, aren't they?
Oh, please let me say this, Mr. Marks. When I say non-controversial, I mean that we will not project any one specific viewpoint over and over. In other words, we will not be a propaganda station.
Mr. Norman certainly has some pretty novel ideas which he thinks will interest a European audience.
Here in America, on the television networks in the daytime, we have a phenomenon known as the soap opera. We plan to actually take the voices from these television programs and put them across the world.
But hang on, don't you need the pictures to go with what's going on?
We here in America have come across an interesting phenomenon, and we found out that the audio actually ties the program together more than the pictures. We are great believers in theater of the mind.
Congressional pressure from Alabama has been put on the FCC to hasten the consideration of Mr. Norman's shortwave application, so there seems to be some political support from the area. But the station is based purely on commercial enterprise. Conventional AM stations can only reach one city or one county in the USA. Shortwave can cover millions of square miles, and the advertisers will be advised of that fact. But will 100 kilowatts be sufficient for a reliable signal in these days of half a megawatt transmitters?
Our engineers assure us that we will have an acceptable and a good signal across the world. Our target areas primarily are mostly the European continent, and then we hope to serve Canada and the Americas as well. We are very cognizant of the fact that the shortwave business basically was started there in your neck of the woods, and in your country, as a matter of fact. We specifically don't see in our country why the medium died out.
But the building and maintenance costs of such a station are much higher than a simple AM or FM station. So what about some figures?
I would imagine that it would be upwards of $1 million. We have actually raised it to a great extent. Actually have the buildings in hand and the land in hand to do this with. Now what we're doing is waiting on the Federal Communications Commission to actually grant us a construction permit.
Mr. Norman is soliciting ideas from shortwave listeners as to programmes they'd like to hear at the address 705 2nd Avenue, Opelika. That's an Indian word, incidentally, meaning great swamp. It's spelt O-P-E-L-I-K-E. And that's in Alabama, 36801, USA. And there's a target date of early 1985. Several hundred miles west of Mr. Norman is a man by the name of Hugh Van Eaton. He has his eye on a 100-kilowatt shortwave transmitter, but he doesn't need to wait for the FCC to grant him permission to begin constructing his station near Homewood, Louisiana.
I have it already. We're going to put out religious programming and music, public affairs announcements and all sorts of things like that, as well as Bible teaching and things of that sort.
Do you have a religious interest yourself, or is it purely commercial?
Yes, I have been a pastor. I've been a pastor of a church for 35 years. I'm going to broadcast to the world. I'm going to broadcast over Europe and South Africa and to the east. I'll have three antennas pointing in three different directions.
You're going to start construction now?
I'm going to start construction shortly, yes.
Oh, I see. And when do you think you'll be on the air?
That I can't say. I'm going very slow at it, and praying every day the Lord will send me some more money. You want to send me some? Got the construction permit this last week.
So that's four of the new six, and their reasons for going on the air.
Well, bearing in mind the increasing interference on shortwave, and some of it is deliberate, this surprising growth in private shortwave broadcasting from the United States presents an unusual trend, especially if music is being considered. Next week, we'll be looking at two more applications and letting you hear what the owners have in mind. Your opinions, of course, are always welcome for our perspective column, aren't they, Jonathan? Jonathan? Well, he was here a minute ago. Jonathan?
Next from the Netherlands, shortwave equipment news.
Well, for this part of the programme, we've come out into the Radio Netherlands car park. I suppose this would qualify for a just outside broadcast. And I'm sitting in the driving seat of my car. We've moved out here to test a new car radio that's due on the Dutch market in a few weeks' time. Some years ago, it was traditional that car radios, on the European continent at least, had the 49-metre shortwave band on them, in addition, or in place of, the longwave band. And, of course, the medium-wave and VHF-FM option have been with us all along. Gradually, the popularity of the 49-metre band on car radios has died out, though many European countries, notably West Germany and Luxembourg, still actively promote the existence of their 49-metre band frequency, in an attempt to keep listeners travelling within 1,000 kilometres of their borders. The existence of any shortwave coverage, though, has been limited, mainly as a sort of extra on luxury car radios, costing about £300 or $500, rather on the expensive side, I think you'd agree. But now the Dutch firm of Philips has come up with a car radio for around 600 guilders in Holland, let's say £120 or $200, with a model type AC739. The first glance, it looks pretty similar to most car radios. There's a built-in cassette recorder for playing back pre-recorded cassettes, including an auto-reverse facility. There's stereo VHF reception. It's up to you, of course, to provide the two speakers, as with most car radios that you buy to install yourself. There's a button for medium wave, and two buttons which you wouldn't normally expect. Long wave on this particular receiver has been replaced by two shortwave bands, in principle offering continuous coverage from 4 MHz right up to 22 MHz. Though, in fact, the bands are marked in metres, so from 75 metres to 25 on band 1, and from 19 metres to 13 metres on band 2. Which sounds rather handy, doesn't it? Not only can you listen to your favourite shortwave station while you're belting down the motorway, but if you meet someone at the traffic lights blasting out Elton John or the Rolling Stones through the open car windows, you can retort with Midnight in Moscow, Lily Bolero, or even Mertohusterik. There's plenty of volume. Let's switch it on.
The United States says it is restricting exports to Iraq that could be used to make chemical weapons.
That's, of course, the voice of America. And we're listening there on 15 megahertz or thereabouts, because it's the tuning mechanism which is the main problem. Even with an ordinary car antenna, which I'm using now, the set's quite sensitive, even on the high frequency band, such as 16 and 13 meters. But to get maximum use out of such a radio, you'll need to be familiar with the shortwave dial. The 19 meter band is indicated by 19 simply written on the dial. And of course, a lot of stations are crowded around this particular spot. Have a listen.
The WRNO worldwide. Macmillan's own. Macmillan, however, or...
And I'm just moving the dial very slightly there. The crowding problem is alleviated somewhat by the tuning knob, which, if you pull it out, becomes a fine tuning control. That's certainly a useful and necessary feature, but once again, if you don't know whereabouts a station is on a particular waveband, you'll simply have to feel your way. The shortwave section is approximately equivalent in performance to a portable radio, costing about half the price, let's say about £60 or around $100 US, of the analog point and dial type, not digital frequency readout, of course. For the extra, remember you're paying for the cassette recorder and FM stereo and medium wave reproduction. The unit is made in Singapore, though it's not known whether this car radio will be available outside Europe. The AC739 is therefore reasonable value for money, but you mustn't expect miracles from it. It's ideal for someone touring around who wants to take a chance that reception is reasonable. Particularly on the out-of-band channels, reception's quite easy. And tuning down the dial, I can even find the Russian over-the-horizon radar system. Anyway, this radio does represent an interesting trend. Indeed, some of the more expensive car radios now incorporate PLL synthesized tuning with digital readout. One wonders then if a shortwave section might become standard in a few years' time. The main car radio manufacturers, though, say they have to wait for demand, so presumably it's up to the customer to simply ask for it. I've noticed while compiling the 7th edition of the receiver shopping list that a lot of people, particularly in Europe, ask for details of a car radio with shortwave coverage. This, then, is one answer for people who aren't too fussy. But you certainly can't start DXing with this unit, of course. But then that might be somewhat dangerous anyway down the freeway. But if you want to get any results at all on the shortwave section, you'll have to fit good suppressors to the engine, or all the stations will simply be swamped by car ignition noise. And at this point, I think I'd better take out the car radio and return back to the Radio Netherlands building. I can see people giving me strange looks as to what on earth I'm up to with a microphone in the car.
Perspective.
Right, we're back indoors, and now this message and recording, which came in earlier this morning from Adrian Peterson in Pune, India, reacting to an item we broadcast 7 days ago.
You mentioned last week that instances of deliberate jamming were on the increase, and I'm afraid this is also the case in our part of the world. Over the last few months, a whole series of jamming noises have started to make their presence more widely felt on our medium wave dial, and on at least a couple of points on the short wave dial as well. This noise is quite distinctive. In January of this year, I visited Goa, and I took with me a short and medium wave receiver. Late in the evening, you could find a whole string of these jamming stations along the dial, and checking the frequencies in the World Radio TV Handbook, they were all on the channels used for Arabic broadcasts by Iran, Kuwait, Syria, Israel, and the USSR. So far, I've noted up to 20 of these jammers operating at the same time. Now, a few nights ago, I checked these medium-wave jammers again late in the local evening. It appears that the jamming of the Syrian stations has stopped, but jamming of broadcasts from Iran has been intensified. Now, bearing in mind the current situation in the Middle East and the general direction of the jamming sound, it seems safe to conclude that the jamming is being done in Iraq. But I've noted two of these flutter-type jammers, in fact similar in sound to jammers used in Nazi Europe during the Second World War, occupying channels allocated to high-power medium-wave stations in Iraq, including the megawatt transmitter at Babylon. Perhaps Iran has reciprocated and is jamming Iraq as well. Now, whilst most of the disturbance is to medium-wave reception, shortwave is also affected, as monitoring of 15085 or 11945 kilohertz reveals. So the media confrontations seem to be escalating.
Now to shortwave media news. Several calls have come in this week about the return of Chad to the airwaves. Rolf Livstrom in Norway first noted it this past Saturday from 17:20 to close down at 22 hours UTC. But since then, Radiodiffusion Nationale Tchadien seems to close at 21 hours on 4904.8 kHz. 4904.8. Here's the close down recorded here at 21 hours last night, with the national anthem. That station hasn't been heard since 1979. Mike Barraclough in England phoned to say that reception's good in the UK, and to pass on the news that the Voice of Peace has switched off its 400-watt shortwave transmitter. The station, based on board a ship somewhere in the Mediterranean, to quote their slogan, has received interference complaints from the Israeli authorities.
Asian Media News Roundup.
And on the line from Sri Lanka is our reporter Victor Gunatilaka. And I believe, Victor, there have been more stations in Asia using frequencies just outside the so-called official shortwave broadcast bands.
Oh, well, FEBC in Manila is going great guns, Jonathan. And of late, they have been trying to use out-of-band, and I've been hearing them on 9500 kHz, 9500, from 1130 to 1400 UTC. And of course, at this time, they are broadcasting with their vernacular service to South and Southeast Asia. Well, I thought this was some transmitter problem, but the engineer tells me it's a deliberate move out of band, and they hope that it will improve reception of their transmissions. 1130 to 1400 UTC, and the frequency 9500.
There's some other sort of DX I seem to note in the ham bands, Victor.
Oh, well, of course, Jonathan, we have been having some DX on the ham band, and I'm sure most amateurs are not very happy about it. It's Radio Tirana, which is quite famous for using the amateur bands in the 40-meter band, but now we hear them loud and clear with their Chinese service, 1300 to 1400 UTC, and they are using 14320 kilohertz, 14320, 1300 to 1400 UTC. And I just checked the 1984 World Radio TV handbook, and this frequency is listed right there in the official schedule of Radio Tirana. Well, Jonathan, Azad Kashmir Radio is quite a popular station, especially in Europe. And Azad Kashmir Radio has been using a new frequency from somewhere around mid-February. And the frequency is 3896 kilohertz, 3896 kilohertz. And we hear them signing on with the Azad Kashmir tune, of course, 1410 UTC, 1410, and they close down at 1800 UTC. And this frequency of 3896 kilohertz, by the way, replaces 4980 kilohertz.
But there's been another sort of home service going on, in the sense that one country is trying to influence another in Asia.
Well, of course, Jonathan, Radio Pakistan, I think, is trying to capture quite a lot of the home service audience of Radio Kabul. And last month I told you that they were using 4760 kilohertz, which is very close to 4740 of Radio Kabul. And now I observe them, actually after a tip-off from Sarat Veerakoon, that they are using 3385 kHz, 3385 kilohertz in the 90-meter band from 1245 to 18 hours UTC. The XLs will remember that Radio Kabul was using 3390 kilohertz for their home service a couple of years back.
But there's interesting news for people looking for Diego Garcia.
Jonathan, I have been trying to dig out, I should say, Diego Garcia from the barrage of stations I hear on this 1485 kilohertz medium wave frequencies, where one is supposed to hear a lot of low-powered medium wave stations. And now suddenly I'm hearing Diego Garcia loud and clear coming on 1485 kilohertz medium wave, and they are heard right here in Sri Lanka anytime after sunset up till about an hour after sunrise here in South Asia. So I'm sure Diego Garcia has increased their transmitter power, and it's not the 25-watt transmitter that is listed in the World Radio TV Handbook.
Hey, I'm listening to five. I'm off the morning with you this morning.
That's a nice tip. Thanks, Victor. Well, that's it for the moment. We'll be back next week when we say goodbye to one of the directors of Radio Netherlands. For the moment, though, this is Jonathan Mark saying have a nice weekend.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.